Coming up on today's show...
It was about 10 o'clock at night and I got a call from Charles Eston and I'm like, oh, I better pick this one up, you know. And he said, hey, man, what are you up to tomorrow night? And I said, oh, nothing much. What did you have in mind? He said, would you like to come and play on the Grand Ole Opry with me?
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on location in Nashville, my guest is an award-winning singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and producer who moved to the United States last year after a long, highly successful music career in Australia. He came to America having had 16 number one hits, 17 top 10 hits, and 43 top 40 hits on Australian country radio. He is a Golden Guitar winner, had 5 Australian Billboard chart-topping albums, and is an Australian Grammy nominee. He has had over 100 songs cut by major label and independent artists with over 50 singles. He also holds the distinction of being the youngest Australian male solo artist to perform on the Grand Ole Opry stage. Last month, he released a side project, and he's working on the documentary, both while not only writing a new album project, but getting ready to tour internationally in 2025, in addition to shows here in the U.S. You've been hearing a song of his called Can You Imagine? Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Angus Gill.
Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. Thank you for sitting and talking with me today.
Pleasure.
Let's get started by having you share with the audience all about the song of yours called Can You Imagine? That was just playing.
Can You Imagine was written with my good friend Eric McCusker, who's out of a band called Mondo Rock. And I'll talk a little bit about this project that I've did with him later. But the song we wrote in 2020, it was a title that Eric had, and we were talking about empathy. And I had just been through a flood where my house didn't get flooded, but the studio underneath was kind of half flooded. I just remember there being, you know, the cries of cattle floating downstream and, you know, seeing the island that we live on kind of just get all waterlogged. Mm. So we were having these conversations, and then all of a sudden these images started to make their way into a song. And sometimes you think that all of this preamble that you have in a co-writing situation is just, you know, us just running our mouths type thing. But oftentimes, and it's very cool when the things that we talk about somehow seep through into the songs.
Mm. So Can You Imagine was originally, I know you said he had the title, but did he have a vision in mind for what he thought it was going to be versus...
No, it was just a title, and it just the conversations that we were having at that time. And I actually think now when I'm thinking back about it, I think it was actually 2021 that we started working on that song, but we were kind of connected in 2020. And then Australia was in and out of lockdowns, and, you know, we really had quite an intense 2 years of not being able to do a lot. So there was a lot of working remotely and that. But, yeah, the flood was early 2021, and we were just having, you know, it was pretty fresh, and we were just kind of catching up and going, what's been going on? And, oh, yeah, my studio's just half flooded, and I've had to, you know, thankfully it was all insured, but I just had to go through the process of buying all the equipment over again, and kind of starting from scratch in that regard. The house was very fine. It didn't get up, you know, anywhere near it, but still it was, you know, it was a hard thing to go through. And so when we were having those conversations, it was like it just started to become apparent that what we were talking about had something to do with that title and that idea of empathy and that idea of you know, what can you imagine what it would be like to go through this, you know?
Okay.
And so it was an interesting way of going about things, because I love when, as we say here in town, you can find the song in the room.
Wow. What an amazing, amazing list of accomplishments I read off in the intro. It begs the question then, what made you decide to leave all that behind in Australia and come here to the U.S.? Walk us through that decision, as well as the making the move here to Nashville specifically, including if you had ever been here before and if you knew anyone at all or if you just showed up.
Well, the interesting thing is I've been coming to Nashville for about 10 years now, I've got a lot of friends and contacts here in town, you know, in the songwriting world, in the artist world, but also in production world, because I produce a lot of things. So when I first started coming, I never really thought I'd move here. I never really, you know, some Aussies just have this dream that they want to move to Nashville and they want to end up here, and I didn't particularly have that dream, so to speak. But I just found the more that I worked with people over here and formed the friendships either in person or over Zoom or over email, because there's been so much of that go on over the last 5 or 6 years, it kind of became apparent to me that this is where I wanted to end up. I think too, because I'm always trying to challenge myself, I'm always trying to further what I do, to push my sound in new directions, to find different ways of being creative, to push the boundaries of what I do. And I think I got used to kind of, I'm very fortunate for the career that I've had in Australia and the opportunities that have came my way. And people kind of say, oh, well, is it through luck? It's not through luck. It's through hard work, you know.
That's way too many instances of luck, if that's luck. Yeah, you can't be lucky that many times.
I don't particularly think I'm a very lucky person, but I think the harder I work, the luckier I get. You know, it was just one of those things where I was also living. I'm from a very small town called Wauchope, which is it's a small, cute little country town in New South Wales on the mid north coast, close to a regional city now called Port Macquarie, which is, you know, like 18 beaches or something in the local area. So it's a very beautiful place, and you know, I've travelled a lot around Australia to a lot of places, and you know, I'm so grateful that I got to live and grow up in Port Macquarie. It's such a beautiful place, and I'm looking forward to getting back there in October. But it's just that I was kind of finding socially, more than anything, that I needed to get out of that area, because I didn't have a lot of friends my own age that live there anymore, because it's kind of the place where you either decide to move to grow a family or to retire.
And there's
kind of not a lot in the middle. It's kind of, you know, that's what you get in small towns. And I thought, well, I either need to move to one of the capital cities, which, you know, it's kind of hit or miss as to whether I'd get anything more out of moving to a Sydney or Brisbane or Melbourne, besides the fact that I could be more social. I don't think professionally it would have, really changed anything that I do. And I thought, well, you know, I've got so many friends and connections here, and the good thing is that they are mainly all in this Nashville area.
Yeah.
So it was kind of where I decided that I needed to end up. And, you know, before I got to a point where I was, you know, had a wife and kids, you know, I'm 27 now. It was good timing to make the move last year.
So let me ask you this then. Instead, tell me about the first time that you ever came to Nashville. How did that come to be?
We decided that we were going to do a family holiday over here, I think, when I was about 16. I was really curious about coming to town.
You were already doing music
at that age? I started very young. I started when I was about 6 or 7. So
wow.
I'm the closest thing to a child actor, except I don't have all that much trauma, you know. So I virtually decided that, you know, my family were keen to come over here. We did the Disneyland thing in LA, in Anaheim, and then we spent a week here. And the first person I wrote with is still one of my best friends in town, a guy called Bill DiLuigi. Mm. He's such a talented guy, one of my favorite people in this town, and we write together all the time. And
but you were only 16 or 17, and you managed to get a co-write on your first visit here.
Yeah, I had several. I'd kind of, you know, lined up a bunch of people to write with while I was here. I didn't waste a lot of time. And Bill D, you know, when I emailed him and everything, he's like, yeah, I'll get together and write with you. So we did, and it kicked off a great friendship. And we've had several Australian number ones together. We actually had a Christmas song that we wrote several years ago called Don't Get Your Tinsel in a Tangle, which I recorded with my good friend Melinda Schneider. And I wrote it with Bill D and a good friend of mine, Kirsty Manor, who wrote Austin for Blake Shelton and many other great songs. And so that was a 5-week number one. So, you know, Bill D and I have had a great friendship over the last 10 years. And, you know, I just found that, you know, I've made a lot of great connections over, you know, coming here, the trips that I've done over here, and driving on the other side of the road and all of that solo. And, yeah, I just found that the timing was right and I was up for new challenges and new things to take on. And, you know, this is what this move kind of represents for
me. It sounds very logical to me. Now, because you told us about coming here on and off for 10 years and the first time that you came with your family, tell us then about this documentary that you're doing.
Yeah, so we've started working on a documentary kind of telling my story from, you know, the transition from moving from Australia to here and the history that I have in Australia and then kind of moving to talk about the new projects that I've got going on here and the exciting touring opportunities, which I'm sure we'll talk about shortly as well.
So are you incorporating old photos, old footage?
Yeah, a lot of footage, over the years? You know, telling my story a lot. I grew up, you know, as I said, in a small country town called Wauchope, and I got one of my first regular gigs at a theme park called Timbertown, which is an 1880 to 1910 heritage theme park. And there's a big steam train that runs right around the outside and, you know, bullock drivers and blacksmiths and, you know, the whole kit and caboodle there. And I got a job singing every Saturday for 4 hours for $25 and a meat pie.
And how old might you have been?
I was 10, you know, when I first got that job. And prior to that, I was actually at Timbertown in the theatre troupe that was there, dressing up as bush rangers and, you know, kind of what have you. And so, you know, I was singing on the corner of this restaurant called the Mall and Wedge and singing the songs like Waltzing Matilda and Bound for Botany Bay and Send Him Home in a Lime Juice Tub and all of those ones that make you want to do the pirate arm thing, you know. And that was an amazing apprenticeship for me, particularly in a live sense, because some weeks you'd have five people come through the park and other weeks you'd have, you know, busloads of tourists that had come in from Sydney that, you know, so it was entertaining from 5 to 500 people. And those five people were a lot harder to draw in than the 500 people. So you really had to work hard to be able to connect with them.
Interesting.
So it's quite a unique way of getting into things, you know, to really kind of kickstarting my performing career. So, you know, we're going to cover a lot of those early parts of my career in the documentary.
So when you say we, who are you working with on it? And is this something that maybe you're doing, and if you understand the way I'm asking this question, like just for YouTube, I'm holding up air quotes, audience, you know, or is it, no, I want to get this like out, distribution, streaming platforms?
We have several applications for it. So I'm working with a crew right now. We haven't technically started filming, but we're kind of in the planning phase of it now. And we're going to start filming in the next month because it's quite a huge undertaking. It's going to take us a year to be able to collect all of the things that we need for it and go and doing the filming. And also because I'm doing quite a bit of international touring this year, we're going to try and capture a lot of that journey as well.
Well,
so.
And if you personally, because it belongs to you, if you have to go back through old photographs, if you have to go back through old videos that maybe you had from several of your trips here so that the viewer can see the timeline of you chronologically going back and forth Australia to Nashville and getting older as you're going through all that, that's a lot for
that's
you
a
to
lot.
Find
it
the time
a lot of work, you
to
know,
compile.
And, yeah, It is, and just trying to go back through the archives and get all my family members to do the same, and then sifting through, because we've got so much content, and it's just trying to pick and choose what we actually want in there and what we don't, because there's such a pool of stuff that we have to choose from. So,
well, it sounds like it's going to be worth the wait. And so, audience, you know, I always encourage you to keep up with the guests through their social media. And so maybe the latter part of 2025, maybe Angus will start having some news that he can reveal in terms of a possible timeline for this. Speaking of travel, exactly 2 weeks after the day that this episode comes out, so that will be Wednesday, May 8th, I will be in Miami Beach. Make plans to join me at the Convention Center for the Business Show / B2B Marketing Expo. I will be speaking there, and I will have a booth for Now Hear This, which is my PR agency. There is no cost to attend, and you can get all the details at b2bmarketingexpo.us. I'm not prepared to reveal the details just yet, but I will put out a teaser that 4 weeks after that, the first full week in June, I'm going to be traveling to somewhere I, for all intents and purposes, will have not been to before. So continue listening to the podcast, read the weekly e-newsletter, follow on the official at Now Hear This Entertainment Instagram account, and I will announce details, all because I would love to meet listeners of this show so I can say a personal thank you in person for listening to the podcast. Angus, wow, you put out a ton of music last year, including, a compilation called The Songwriter So Far, which had 20 songs on it.
Yeah.
Tell us all about that project.
Well, that one came about, it's kind of like a best of so far. And I suppose, you know, my thing has been, I'm a singer-songwriter of the storytelling kind. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we went through my catalog and my last five studio albums and picked out the best songs that represent me as a storytelling songwriter. And it's not particularly full of all of the songs that I suppose have been hits or number ones for me, but songs that my audiences really connect with, that they're the ones that people always go, which record is this on? You know, this song is my story.
Yeah.
You know, you've written my story. I was in tears after you sung that, or this makes me think of my grandchildren, or whatever. So that's what I wanted to accomplish with that project. And it was also a good thing to do to kind of round off my chapter of, you know, the last 10, 15 years making music in Australia. And, you know, kind of since I've made the move over here, it's kind of really good to go, well, this is what is representative of my work, you know.
So all 20 songs had all previously been released. It wasn't, 18 of them were, and then I threw two new ones on
No. There was, we did put Can You Imagine on there as kind of like a taster to this upcoming project, which I'll talk about shortly with Eric McCusker. But yeah, all of the songs were lifted off previous projects.
So just so I have the timing correct, so The Songwriter So Far, that whole project was put together before you actually made the move to America last year?
Yes, it was. Yes. Okay. It was out in the middle of February, and I moved over at the end of February
last year. So it was kind of a, this was my time in Australia, thank you, farewell.
Farewell.
See you down the road.
See you later. That's right.
So yeah, let's talk about, as I mentioned in the intro, last month you released a side project. I won't steal your thunder. Tell the audience all about that, who you did it with, how it came about, all the details.
So I was talking a little earlier about my collaboration with Eric McCusker, who is an Australian rock legend out of a band called Mondo Rock, and they had a lot of big hits. Songs like Come Said the Boy and The State of the Heart and Chemistry, Summer of 81. Aussie classics. And we got connected through my publisher, Philip Mortlock, at Origin Music Publishing. And that was in about 2020. And we got together and we just hit it off over our love of great songs and the art and the craft of songwriting. And we started working on a few songs together. Can You Imagine was the first song we did. And then we got back together kind of when we were in one of the COVID lockdowns in 2021. We started it in person And it was a song that went on to become Canned Laughter, which was the second track off this project. And then we kind of asked each other, well, what are we doing this for? You know, what purpose is this going to serve? Is that going to be something that Eric could do on a project of his? He has a band he works with called The Dream Room. So is it something that The Dream Room could do, or is it something that I could do? Or, you know, are we both going to get together and do a collaborative EP, which we decided we were going to do? So we wrote those four songs over the course of about, it really from woe to go, it took us about 4 years to get it finished because, you know, I've really enjoyed the process with Eric for a number of reasons because Eric's very meticulous about a lyric and I kind of have the same attention to detail because the devil is in the details. And as Paul Simon says, the ear is drawn to the irritant. And so, you know, Eric's very particular about those things, and this whole process was a series of very small decisions.
Meaning?
You know, like we would work on a song and then Eric could give me a call up and go, I just don't know if that word on the first line of the second verse is right.
Wow.
And then he'd start, you know, working away, and then he'd kind of almost rewrite that second verse, you know, and send it to me. And I go, yeah, I think it's really good, but I think the start of the original verse that we had is better than the one that's there. And so, you know, and I'd play around with it and then text that through to him, and then and then he'd play around with it and sit on it for a week, and then he'd call me up and go, what's this like? And I go, I think we really said it all the first time around, you know. So there was a lot of coming and going, but, you know, we didn't leave any stone unturned. It was a wonderful thing.
But you started to say that the two of you said, well, what are we doing this for? Am I going to do it with my band? Are you going? So now it gets released last month, and yet here you are in Nashville, Tennessee, and I assume he's in Australia.
He's in Australia, yeah.
So is it, let's just release music, and obviously we're never going to perform it together, or is it he may come to Nashville one time, I may go to Australia, we may do a thing where we perform together?
Yeah, we didn't really have, because it was COVID times when all of this started and when we really got the bones of all of the songs together. So we were, I suppose, just following our heart and following what we love and, you know, trying to entertain ourselves during those times because Australia was essentially in and out of lockdowns for 2 years. It was a very long time. To be in a state of paralysis, so to speak. So
yeah, so I guess at that point you're not thinking about what about a year from now? What about 2 years from now? What are we going to do with those songs then? It's, hey, let's be creative during COVID.
And I still think it's still part of my process to kind of try and write the best song or try and write the song in the room and serve it best and then think about how we're going to where we're going to place it later on. Because I think if you're always trying to be driven by writing to a particular brief or writing to serve a particular purpose, it can kind of get in the way of the creative process. You know, there's plenty of people that do that and do it well, but I find that it's really good to just focus on the task at hand and serving that the best and then deciding where to place it later on.
Yeah, and I like that answer because 2 weeks ago in this show, I interviewed Brandon Bing here in Nashville, and he talked about writing a song and just kind of feeling it in the writing process that, gee, you know what would be really great on this song right now in this part is, and we were talking about something like maybe steel guitar, for example, and we were, where the discussion went was, you're not sitting there thinking about, well, but when I go out live, if I'm, you know, 1,000 miles away, I may not have a steel guitar player. So he was saying, like, no, you still got to just serve the song and say, let's put the steel guitar in. And you know what? When I go play it live, if I don't have a player, I'll have my guitar player do his own thing and let him thrive with a solo then or a fiddle player.
And so trying to let the song, you know, there's so many people in this day and age that try and perform the song exactly like the record. And I think it's, I've worked with this great live music producer called Amy Walter, who's here in town. I've known Amy for about 10 years as well, and she's just fantastic. And, you know, she's always said, live is live. How you arrange a song live should be different to how you do it in the studio. So it's really good. I really do like to keep the studio version and the live version separate because, you know, when you think of all of the classic albums, Little Feat comes to mind, Dixie Chicken, you know, you hear the studio version and then you hear the version on their live album, which goes on for about 7 or 8 minutes. And it's cool to see where they take that song in a live setting. And there's plenty of other examples like that. But I think it's, for me personally, I know there's plenty of people that like doing, you know, the same form that they do in the studio live, and that's fine. But I like to have a bit more freedom to be able to do it how I want live. So, and I think, you know, just going back to that conversation about trying to write the song in the room, there's been plenty of times where I've been commissioned to do a project where we have a specific brief or a theme that we're writing to. And I do enjoy doing that too because it can be fun. But I think when I'm, for the most part, I really like to focus on getting the best result out of the room and out of the song, pushing the song to, you know, just making sure that you don't leave any stone unturned. Is that the best line that we can get there? You know, it's, for me, the song always comes first.
Now, if all that's not enough, now you're working on writing a new album project. And again, there were 8 releases last year alone with your name attached to them. Now you've got the side project we just heard about. My gosh, you are just all in. Tell us about the new album project that you're writing.
Well, I don't have an off button, Bruce, you know, as you probably figured. Well, I've got 2 projects right now which are on the go. I'm working on a introductory to the US from Angus type thing. And then I'm finishing off a project for my Australian publisher, Philip Mortlock at Origin Music, which has been going on for several years as well. You know, we have several other artists featuring on it, but it's actually taking classic Australian rock and pop hits and doing bluegrass arrangements of them. And I've had a bunch of artists, some of the original artists as well, sing on the songs with me. So that's one project that'll be out very shortly. And then, you know, I'm working on my kind of, I suppose, US album project, which is introducing myself to a US audience. You know, I'm very proud of my Australian roots, and that's very much part of my story. And I'm taking what I bring to the table and introducing it to a new audience, which is, you know, it's kind of best described like you've finished primary school, you've been school captain or vice captain, and then you have to, you know, move away to a new high school and then and try and, you know, and fit in there. So it's kind of a little bit like that, I suppose, you know, which is exciting and daunting at the same time, but we're really having a great time with it. So
but I would think that because you have been coming back and forth to Nashville for so long, and I'm putting this in the form of a question, I would have to think that maybe the writing that you're going to do for what I just jokingly refer to as Angus 2.0, I would like to think that maybe the writing wouldn't be that much different.
No, it's not.
Okay.
There's a lot of kind of slight differences in things to how we work in Australia, particularly on the music industry side, but also sonically. There's sonic differences from kind of what would stereotypically, you know, be referred to as an Australian country sound, you know, versus an American country sound. And I'm trying to take, you know, different parts of what I do in Australia and who I represent and who I am and blend that with kind of what's happening right now. I've always been one to follow what I want to do as well, because it's the integrity, authenticity aspect of it. It's very hard for me to try and, you know, do something that my heart's not in. I can't. I'm either all in or not at all. So, but it's trying to take, you know, different influences, you know, my heritage, my story, and infuse that, blend that with a more contemporary sound.
And I applaud you for doing that, because if you came over here and just tried to copy everybody else, then you are leaving kind of your secret weapon behind.
Exactly.
You know, here's what you had in Australia that worked so well. And let's face it, nobody was doing what Jelly Roll did until he did
it.
Nobody was doing what Shaboozey is doing until he did it.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it works for Jelly Roll, if it works for Shaboozey, why can't Angus Gill come out and say, this is still country,
yeah,
kind of, but I put my own little Angus flavor
on it.
Yeah, it's
my own Angus, yeah. A good friend of mine always said, Angus does things Angus's way. You know? And it's true. I have to, because I wouldn't be true to myself if I didn't do things the Angus way.
Exactly.
And I've always been one. I've always prided myself on sounding like me, looking like me, you know, writing like me, having a, you know, my singing voice and my writing voice are all distinctively me. You know, there's different versions of them, and there's very much an evolution of them. You know, when I first started making records, when I put out my, it was an EP called Livewire, which I think was back in 2014, don't quote me on it. You know, I sung in a very ochre Australian accent. Mm. And because I grew up singing a lot of Australiana bush ballad type songs with a very pronounced Aussie accent. And I put out a song. I actually won a Golden Guitar Award a couple of years ago, which is an Aussie CMA award for Bush Ballad Song of the Year, for a song I had called The Easy Way. And I sung that in a more kind of pronounced Aussie accent as well, because, you know, that was me being true to what the subject matter and the language of the song, you know, required. So in order to best serve that song, I sung it in more of a pronounced Aussie accent. I also have a song on my Songwriter So Far record called Waiting for the Boss, which is another bush ballad story song. It's interesting, you know, there's a lot of Australian themes in that song, but I played it to some audiences over here, and it still hits them as hard as it does when you play it to an Aussie crowd, which is, you know, that's the whole part of this job is empathy, you know. And so even though there might be a couple of words in that song that an American audience mightn't particularly understand, but given the context of how those words are being delivered, they can get what it is I'm trying to say. So,
and if you have an American crowd responding the way that an Aussie crowd does, then you say, aha, there is room over here for me to do some of what we're talking about incorporating into Angus 2.0 so that people go, this guy's got something a little bit different. I'm interested. I'm going to keep following him. I like it. He's got my attention.
And for me, it's, you know, the whole conversation about accent in songs, you know, I could probably go on forever about it, but I kind of like to, as I call it, sing in an international accent. So I'm taking some of the Australian stylings and some of the American stylings, and it's kind of a more an accessible hybrid voice to sing in, because, you know, of course you have to be yourself, and I have a very recognisable tone, but you're also trying to be commercial at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's kind of taking a nice little blend of the two and finding a way to make that work. Something I very much focus on too when I'm producing vocals for other artists too, because you know, it's all of the kind of the inner workings. I'm pulling back the curtain here.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff. I am joined today on location in Nashville by singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and producer Angus Gill. Visit his official website at angusgill.com.au. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You have been hearing about all the music that he releases. Go to the shop section of his website to buy his music. You will see options ranging from vinyl to CD to digital download. You can also find his music on iTunes, Spotify, and other online digital music retail and streaming platforms. Stick around, because I'm going to be asking Angus about all the touring that he will be doing in 2025. Meanwhile, connect with him on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. I was mentioning that 2 weeks from today begins the two-day event that I will be at in Miami Beach, including not only having a booth for my PR agency, but speaking as well. In January, I spoke at PodFest Multimedia Expo in Orlando. In February, I spoke at the San Francisco Writers Conference. A couple weeks ago, I spoke at the Las Vegas Writers Conference. Plus, as I teased, there is an event I will be speaking at in June. If you or someone you know are doing an event that I can be a part of as a speaker, please go check out speakerbrucew.com. There is a video on there, as well as a list of locations and events where I have spoken. And then you can use the contact option on there to get in touch to start a conversation about whatever event it is that you would like to see about having me be a part of. Again, speakerbrucew.com. I look forward to hearing from you. Angus, take us back 5.5 years ago to what I imagine you can still remember as clearly as if it was 5.5 days ago, meaning the Grand Ole Opry performance that you did. How did that come up? And then just take us through the actual moment of stepping out on that stage and doing the performance.
Well, how that all came about was I wrote with Charles Esten, who's best known, you know, for starring in the Nashville TV series. And so we got together and wrote a song called Feet of Clay, which I cut on a bluegrass record I did called The Scrapbook. And a couple of weeks later, after we'd written the song, you know, we both really liked the song. And a couple of weeks later, I was eating at one of my favorite places in town, Sperry's over in Bellmead. It's a great steakhouse. And it was about 10 o'clock at night, and I got a call from Charles Esten. And I'm like, oh, I better pick this one up, you know. And he said, hey, man, what are you up to tomorrow night? And I said, oh, nothing much. What did you have in mind? He said, would you like to come and play on the Grand Ole Opry with me? And so he'd pre-organized the whole thing. So I turned up, and they were actually doing the Opry at the Ryman. So I got to kill two birds with one stone.
Wow.
And we, you know, he invited me out on stage, and we sung our song together on that big Grand Ole Opry stage. And I said to Chip, I said, you know what? I think this makes me the youngest Australian male artist to have played on the Grand Ole Opry, you know, which was a pretty cool moment to be able to stand in that circle with Charles and sing that song.
Now, did the fact that he called you the day before, did that make it easier that you didn't have days and weeks to dwell on it? Or was it, I was still as nervous as if I had had weeks notice?
I think I was nervous up until about the point that I got there. And then when I got there and, you know, was catching up with, you know, as soon as I got through security, I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I'm going to really enjoy this. And I did, you know, it was kind of a blur when I was actually out on the stage playing with him. Like that part, I can kind of remember looking out to the crowd, looking over to Chip, and that's about as much, much as I remember. And then it was over. And I think every artist only gets about 3 songs on the Opry. And so, you know, he did his 2 songs and then brought me out. But I just remember that the, you know, reading all of the comments on Twitter and that about the song, I was so glad that it really hit home for people when we played it. And, yeah, it was cool also. I'm pretty sure everyone that plays on the Grand Ole Opry, from Dolly Parton to myself, gets paid about $250, you know. And they offered to pay me afterwards, and I was like, oh, I'm just like, I couldn't accept the payment due to the visa that I was on, you know. I was only just on a tourist, you know, kind of an Esther or something at that point, you know. And so I couldn't actually physically get paid for it.
Interesting.
But it was very sweet of them to offer after I did the performance.
So speaking of performing live, I have teased this a couple times. Tell us about both the international and the domestic touring that you are planning for 2025.
Well, it's very exciting because this year I get to go and see a whole heap more of this country, which I really haven't seen a lot of America because I've spent so much time here in Nashville on all of the trips that I've done. But we are going to Utah, we're going to Vermont, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts. Old Boston. We're also doing, I believe, Florida. We're actually doing Canada. So doing quite a bit of international touring. Canada, Denmark in September. We're doing Australia in October, which I can't wait to go home. And we're also doing South Africa in December this year, I believe. So
now, clarify for me, because I know that September, Denmark, and October, Australia. I know those are Nashville Nights International Songwriters Festival. South Africa Is that that or is that?
No, no. So Denmark is, we are going over there and doing the Nashville Night Songwriter Festival. And we're actually bringing, you know, I'm touring mostly doing, you know, with my good friend Blue Foley, doing Nashville Night's songwriter shows.
Mm-hmm.
And so South Africa is going to be a small run with Blue Wow. Foley and my friend, great South African friend and artist, Cindy Alter, who has sold 14 million records. She's out of a band called Clout, and they had some great success with a song called Substitute. And she's had a wonderful career in her own right. But I'm really looking forward to doing South Africa because I'm very much obsessed with accents. And and the South African accent is one of my favorites. You know, I'm not really a dessert type of person. It's quite a staccato accent, you know. So I'm looking forward to going to play Cape Town, you know, and Johannesburg. And, you know, it'll be fabulous time in South Africa.
Now, there have been different names that have come up during our conversations so far, which to me is a nod to the power of collaborations. Can you share a bit about just some of the many legends here in the U.S. and back in Australia that you have collaborated with or had songs cut by?
Yeah, it's kind of been crazy in that regard because, you know, a lot of people back home know me for busting out and doing all of these collaborative projects, you know, but it's one of those things about music, you know, it's great to be able to get together with someone that has, you know, similar interests or some kind of common thread and go, how about we do that song together? What would that sound like? You know, I always get a kick out of receiving a vocal file from somebody or having someone come into the studio and sing a vocal on something, whether it be just, you know, for something I'm producing, if I'm producing a record for an artist and they come in and sing something. It's always fun to just go, and particularly when it comes to hearing someone else's voice on a song that you've written, whether it be a song that's cut or whether it be a duet for some kind of project that mm-hmm. we're working on, it's always amazing to hear. Like I've known Steve Earle for about probably 10 plus years, and I had him sing on a song of mine a couple of years ago called The New Old Me, and I called him up during COVID times, and I, you know, we had a really good catch up, and I said, hey, I'm working on this project right now. I've got this song called The New Old Me that I'd recorded it with the members of Paul Kelly's band. Paul Kelly's a very well-known Australian artist, and I kind of kidnapped his band for two records and made two albums as Angus Gill and Seasons of Change. That was kind of what I called that group, even though they're not really called that. I called them that for that project, you know, because it was a different sound and I wanted to make that distinction. And so I sent the song to Steve and he called me back and said, man, I love the song. I'm going to put a vocal down on it in 3 weeks. And then, you know, I got the part through and it's like, damn, that's pretty cool hearing Steve Earle, you know, sing on that song. You know, like I've been, you know, grateful to have had a good friendship, you know, with him. He's been very supportive of me and I really always enjoy catching up with him and shooting the breeze. It's wonderful being able to, anytime someone cuts a song of yours, it's really cool to hear how they've interpreted it and how they've phrased it and what they've done.
Yeah, I'm looking at this list of, my gosh, the names, the list is such a lengthy list of people that you've had collaborations or songs cut by. And I think that some people go an entire career and maybe end up with a list that you have, and you're only 27.
Mm.
And so you're going to continue to add to that list and add to that list and add to that list. And I was kind of wondering as you were talking, how many of these are Angus going out and asking someone to collaborate versus someone coming to you and saying, and I think that the more that you build this resume that is already super impressive, people are going to start, the number's going to go up of all the incoming requests that you're going to get for collabs, which, you know, you seem like you would have no problem with.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, a lot of the times I'm not scared of asking the question if I'm hearing a particular voice on a song. It's always trying to find the most direct route to get to someone, and it helps if you've got a connection with someone already. because whenever you've got to go through managers and, you know, agents and things like that, the answer's always going to be a no before they even hear the song, yeah. You know. It's like, because that's kind of their job is to gatekeep all of that. Yeah. So whereas it's interesting, I did this project during 2020, which was a musical comedy project with a bunch of comedians that I co-wrote and produced the project with, and it was a really fun thing. But I had a friend on there that put me in contact with a lot of these great comedians that we had involved in the project, and, you know, I might have tried reaching out to their agent or manager or something and gotten the token response, you know, from someone called Mark or Lisa, you know, that sent me an email going, oh, thank you for reaching out, Angus, but unfortunately this artist is way too busy to accommodate your request, you know. And I go, oh, yeah, sure, you know. And then, but this person would send me, you know, my friend, great friend Bev Killick would go, here you go, just send them a text, here's their number, wow, you know, and wow. then I send them a text and they go, yeah, I'd love to be part of it, you know. So it's interesting, you really do have to, you can't be afraid of asking the question, and that's something that my father taught me. Mm. You know, my father's definitely drilled a lot of good business principles into me, and it can be daunting sometimes reaching out to ask the question. You go, oh, should I or shouldn't I? You know, you procrastinate. I still procrastinate on it a little bit. But, and then there's other times where, you know, someone might call me up and go, hey, you know, have you got a song for this project, or I've got a song I'm working on, would you consider singing on it? Or, and then other times it kind of, it's very organic. It's like if we get together and write, and then it makes the most sense if we cut this as a duet or have them sing harmonies or play guitar solo, yeah, or something, yeah, on it. It's just like, well, you know, what have we got to lose? It was like the project I did with Eric. It's like, well, say, hang on a minute, what are we doing this for? Why don't we just do it together, you know?
So speaking of people that you've worked with, you mentioned the name Blue Foley before. He has been a guest on multiple episodes of Now Hear This Entertainment. And he's not only how you and I got connected, but wow, the two of you have written more than 50 songs together over the past year alone?
Yeah, yeah, all in this here studio.
Wow.
You know, it's been wonderful. I've known Blue for about 8 years. We go back to my second studio album, Welcome to My Heart. Blue wrote the title track with me and Lala Deaton, and we've been friends ever since. We were connected by a good friend of mine from Australia, a guy called Matt Scullion, who's a really good songwriter and good guy. And, yeah, Blue and I have been friends ever since, and we kind of have a long-standing right, get together every Monday and work on something.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, more than 50 songs in the past year alone, that's one a week.
Yeah, that has been. Yeah.
Wow.
And sometimes it's been twice a week, or it's been, you know, three times a week sometimes. Mm. Sometimes it's like I look at my schedule, blue, and then we usually have someone join us as well. Mm-hmm. Like we've written plenty of songs, just him and I. And I really enjoy, you know, I did a two-way co-write today with a good friend, Helene Cronin. So I do enjoy doing a two-way situation, but oftentimes I'll have artists from Australia that'll come over and go, hey, you know, would love to get together to write. And I go, oh, well, you know, be good if you meet Blue and we'll all get together, yeah, and work on something. And we just have, you know, Blue and I can finish each other's sentences like a, you know, a married couple for 50 years, you know. We just have that, you know, I know how he works, he knows how I work, yep, and we complement each other really well. And, you know,
so there's one more name I want to bring up before we start winding this down, which is guitar hero James Burton. What is your story in terms of being connected with him?
Well, I got to be friends with James through some other Aussie friends of mine. You know, we've been friends for about a year now, and it's really cool. Like, James, I think he's turning 86 this year, and he's such a legend. Like, you know, Country Music Hall of Famer, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Musicians Hall of Famer, played, was very much a pivotal part of Elvis's career, and Ricky Nelson and Emmylou Harris and everybody in between. And, you know, James has become like family to me.
Wow.
You know, we just go around, I go around there, you know, on a Sunday afternoon, and I play cards with his grandkids, and I, you know, we get
JB to get the old Flame Telecaster out. And I'm sitting there playing his Angel Telecaster and he's playing the Flame. And I start singing along and James is just sitting there, you know, playing his signature licks. Wow. And he's playing as timeless and ageless. Mm. And, you know, you do have to pinch yourself. I don't get starstruck very easily, you know, because it's kind of a normal part of what we do. It's, you know, sharing the love of music and the love for what we do. And so you just get to know people as people rather than as famous people,
yeah.
I suppose. But, you know, I kind of do have to pinch myself every now and again and go, this is James Burton, you know. And I think I've got some guitar picks of his lying around on this table somewhere. But, you know, it's him and his wife Louise are such sweet people. So it's been wonderful. It was a real thrill to be able to you know, witness him being inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame in October last year. And to be there with the family and close friends. I sat next to John Oates out of Hall and Oates, and we've kind of struck up a bit of a friendship since. And he's a nice guy. He invited me into the studio when he was working on a track shortly after that. And they had Elvis Costello there honouring James. They had Brad Paisley, they had Emmy Lou, Vince Gill and Rodney Crowell, who I also know. And then they were like, you know, we'd normally kind of draw the line here on the show and wrap things up, but we had someone else that really wanted to come out and play tribute to James Burton. So would you please welcome Keith Richards? And then Keith come out and sung his song. And so, you know, it was just a wonderful thing to see James be rightly inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame.
That's awesome. That's awesome. There's a name you brought up a few minutes ago, and you started to talk about the song, but we're going to close today with another one of Angus's original songs, one called The New Old Me. Before I let you go and we play that track, Angus, share with the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
I wrote this one with my good friend Alan Caswell, who's Australia's most recorded songwriter. He's had nearly 1,000 songs cut.
Wow.
And Kaz and I wrote this probably in 2017 or 2018. It was a really long time ago. And I had the title and I had the kind of a couple of lines of it and the music worked out. And I brought it to Caswell and I said, you know what, I'd really like to try and write a song that I could do as a duet with Steve. Because I've known him for a little while. He's been really supportive. And I thought, well, it'd be great to see if we could write something that would be, it's kind of like a, you know, a mentor, mentee type, you know, I showed you the ropes, you know, type song.
Yeah.
I taught you to toughen up type thing, you know. And so, you know, we sat down and wrote that one afternoon at Caswell's place. And then I said I was, you know, we kind of tracked the band tracks for it. And I thought, you know, it'd be wonderful if we could get Steve on it. I thought, well, Caswell could sing it with me if we can't, for whatever reason, we can't get Steve on it. But thankfully, Steve agreed to do it. And I'm still really proud of that song. And I love hearing Steve open that song. You know, it's just, there's a guitar solo in it that was a little bit controversial because when we first put the song out on country radio at home, there was a couple of presenters that said, oh, really love the song, but that guitar solo is a bit hardcore, you know. But it was one of my favorite parts of the song. That's Dan Kelly just doing this rip-roaring, you know, extraterrestrial guitar solo in there. I just love it.
So do I have the logistics correct? You did it all in Australia and then Steve recorded here and sent his vocal to you.
Okay. Over the World Wide Web.
Fantastic. Angus, this has been amazing. Thank you so much. It was great to meet you. I really appreciate you making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment.
Thanks for having me, Bruce. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, my pleasure. And with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and producer Angus Gill. Again, do visit his official website at angusgill.com.au. As I said before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You heard us talk a great deal about all the music that Angus has put out and will be releasing. Go into the shop section of his website for vinyl, CDs, and digital downloads, or head to iTunes, Spotify, and other online digital music retailers and streaming platforms. This morning, I followed Angus on Facebook and Instagram, and I know he would appreciate you doing the same. In addition, go subscribe to his YouTube channel and then watch and like the videos on there. For that matter, tell Angus you heard him and his music on Now Hear This Entertainment. Keep up with him online for details on not only the new music he has in the works, but for dates and locations for all the tour stops he'll be making throughout 2025. You heard him specifying both domestic and international. I really appreciate you tuning in to the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you're still with us at the end of the episode, I'm guessing you're enjoying what you're hearing, so thank you for sticking around. If you would like to show your appreciation for the work I put into making this show happen week after week, year after year, 11 years with no breaks, I have got an easy way for you to do so. Head over to nhte.net, where you will spot a bright yellow Buy Me a Coffee button. It's not a sponsor, and there's no brand behind it. It is simply a way for you to send a little support my way with a personal message that I will see. Alternatively, you can go directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. Your support means the world to me, and I thank you in advance. That's going to do it for episode 584. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Angus Gill. This is the one he just talked about. It's called The New Old Me.
Well, there's some things I wouldn't do just for the sake of change. Anger once used whiskey is a shortcut to my brain. Well, I'm the last man standing from a happy bunch of fools who thought the day was big enough to kick against the rules. Well, I had a flair for screwing up, as most of you agree. Oh, welcome to the new old me. Put their crap on me like I was just a kid. You told me to toughen up, buddy, that's just what I did. I built myself a stronger heart so it don't break no more. I grew myself a second skin that was thicker than before. When you're looking in the mirror, the new old me. So we're ripping off the rich so we can give it to the poor. Guys like us can see the world from both sides of the law. Credit, cause I know there's credit due. I just taught you bits and tricks and the rest was up to you.
Got my future covered because I've learned from your mistakes. And I can run big rings around the phonies and the fakes.
And if you die, well, it's not my responsibility. Ah, welcome to the new old me.
Yeah, well, I can do just what